Good morning, good afternoon. This is Dave Vellante, and I'm here at Wikibon headquarters with Stu Miniman. And we are here to talk about VMware's latest announcement. Today, VMware made a big announcement. The topic of today's Peer Insight is maximizing the value of your VMware investment. Back in 2009 at a financial conference, Paul Moritz, the CEO of VMware, made a statement. He said, "We are building a software mainframe." At the time, we thought, well, that's quite ambitious, a software mainframe. What does that mean? Software mainframe is scalable, it's reliable, it's secure, it never goes down. And today, VMware made a series of announcements, and we're going to look at those announcements in the context of the statement that Moritz made several years ago. Herod today, Steve Herod. Stu, you know Steve Herod. We've had him on theCUBE before.
Yep.
His statement today was they have put in 1 million engineering hours, hundreds of capabilities that they're announcing today, and 2 million hours of Q&A.
Yeah, it was really VMware's mega launch, if you will.
VMware's mega launch, right. So we are broadcasting live on justin.tv/Wikibon if you want to watch the broadcast. And so this is a Peer Insight research meeting where we evaluate technologies in the data center and how they're being applied to solve business problems. Today we're going to look at the VMware announcement. Moritz talked about taking the next step today in the journey to IT automation. He said there are two major shifts going on. The first one is a change in architecture, what people call cloud. And he talked about it's all about reducing complexity, improving, simplifying the infrastructure, making the infrastructure dependable, and ultimately more automated. And the second trend was this change in end-user devices, this eclectic mix of devices that users have in the consumer and digital worlds. And Moritz talked about those two worlds coming together and how VMware is intent on building a new platform to provide services for existing applications and new applications. And essentially what he said, quote, make infrastructure go away. Moritz used the analogy of the Microsoft Office suite. Moritz spent 15 years, as you know, Stu, at, and others in the audience at Microsoft. He talked about at the time they built a suite of productivity tools for white-collar workers. And today he said that VMware is announcing the world's first cloud infrastructure suite. So we're going to talk about, is VMware delivering on that vision? What does this announcement mean to businesses, to IT organizations, and the VMware ecosystem at large? So we'll explore these questions and others, including yours. Everybody is welcome to participate in this Peer Insight. It's an open forum, and we want your opinion. So. So let's start off. Stu, can you take us through what was announced and what's new?
Sure, Dave. Thanks. So we're actually going to put up on the screen here, trying out some split screen. Thanks, Jeff, Dave Butler, for manning the cameras for us. Walking through, as Dave said, the cloud infrastructure suite. And this is really a bundle of a lot of different products that VMware is releasing. So the first, you know, big major thing is that vSphere 5.0 is released. So along with that, there are a lot of pieces that we'll dig into a little bit later regarding some of the storage functionalities and APIs that are going. But what vSphere 5 is looking to do is really eliminate some of the scalability restraints that have been in virtual environments before. So if you talk about moving from test dev environments, moving up to kind of tier 2 and tier 3 applications, and we've over the last year or so with like vSphere 4 and now vSphere 5 trying to go into those tier 1 applications, there were certain applications, especially very large databases, where you just couldn't scale large enough with VMware. And this latest release, vSphere 5, now really eliminates that technical barrier. So that we can now really put whatever is VMware calls business critical applications on there from a technical standpoint. Also, in vSphere 5, there's a vSphere storage appliance, which we'll spend a little time talking about. It's really an entry level product, which is taking your internal DAS and turning it into shared storage. And there's definitely some dynamics there from both the server vendors and the storage vendor as to how that plays. If we move up through the suite, vCenter SRM 5.0. So SRM has been a very popular product from VMware. The two main things that you're getting in SRM 5 is, first, for your existing enterprise customers, you now can have automated failback. So we had automated failover before, but now having failback really completes that suite. There's been a couple of vendors that have been able to do this before, but now it's actually baked into the product itself so that all of the replication products are going to be able to support this going forward. And the second piece is a native host-based replication product, and we'll spend a little bit of time talking about that. vCenter Operations was announced earlier this year, I believe in February, and this is starting to look at how we really operationalize hybrid clouds, so moving from my internal data center to a service provider and moving that back and forth. So that's what the vCenter Operations is. vShield 5.0, really looking at the security aspects of the virtual environment. As we've seen recently, security is a hot button issue. Just listened to John Chambers at Cisco Live talking about how while security has tended to be on those surveys the third or fourth most talked about thing, that really the people running operations today know that if it's not secure, it's not something that you're going to do in your enterprise environment. And then the last piece of the cloud infrastructure suite is vCloud Director 1.5, and this is allowing for very fast provisioning of my environment using a feature called Link Clones. So reducing down deployment of virtual machines to even seconds and saving on a large amount of storage by using that. And vCloud Director is also going to be able to allow for that self-service model for cloud environments.
Okay, so there you have the suite from OS all the way up to policy management. And so, so David Floyer, break it down for us. What's your assessment of this announcement? How should users be looking at it? We lose David? You on mute? Okay, I think we've lost David for it. So let's break it down. So really, in thinking about this announcement, Stu, there are four broad components that users should be looking at, I would say, and I'd be interested in other people's thoughts. So the first one essentially is skinnying down the kernel. And Nick, you know, we were pre-briefed on this, and Nick, you sort of brought that up the other day, and really targeting sort of the smaller end of the spectrum.
Right. So we've seen a year back at VMworld last year, talked about the transition from ESX to ESXi, and now the solution is all ESXi. So that's going to be able to, right, you said skinny down, faster deployments, and be able to be much more scalable in those kind of environments.
Okay, and then there's a simplified management piece, which comes in with the new SRM, right, which is, you know, a key component. And then the third piece really is scalability. So we talk about software mainframe. Now, Maritz uses sort of a tongue-in-cheek, says if you're over 40, it's a software mainframe. If you're under 40, it's cloud. And so when we talk about a software mainframe or a mainframe, we start to think about scalability. We start to think about resource constraints and removing those resource constraints in terms of more memory allocated per virtual machine, more storage, more IOs, and the throughput of these systems on the new vSphere announcements is substantially higher. And then the fourth component is security. And so that's kind of a reasonable way to look at this announcement. Nick Allen, you're online. Anything you would add to that?
Well, we got into all the storage stuff.
Yeah, so let's hold off on that. Let's take it at a high level. In other words, so I think that's kind of a reasonable way to break down the overall announcement, and then we're going to drill down into the storage piece. So anything you'd add at a high level or anybody else on would do so. I can see David Floyer, but I just can't hear him. Talking away on Skype.
He's talking away?
He's on Skype, but he's not on the phone. Anyway, anybody else out there have anything to add, or we can move on if not?
Dave Welch here at the high level. We're not overly gratuitous in the compliments that we hand out, but they've pulled together a suite here of products that we are extremely impressed with. vCloud Director at the top of it, which I continue to remind the world, a source code branch off Lab Manager that VMware has 6 years of tenure GA experience with. And I have been waiting. vCloud Director is excited as we are, but it's been flying off the shelves and exceeding all of VMware's sales projections. We've been hesitant to endorse this because it didn't have the link clone capability that was absolutely critical in production product development lifecycle. that's there now, also combined with multiple data stores underneath a single collection of virtual machines. And as if this product isn't taking off already, we see an incredible opportunity for this product in the private cloud base, leaving the public cloud and hybrid cloud for a couple more years for organizations. SRM, second in impressiveness to us as a product, and we're very excited about the, especially the MidKit that now has a host-based replication opportunity that they would not have had with array-based replication that many of them don't have licensed. We're very impressed with vCenter Operations Suite in our initial look at the actual experimentation with it. So overall, the concept, a bundled enterprise offering, they've hit all the components we're interested in as a tier one virtualization team, and we really see a lot of distractions here.
Okay, thank you, David. And we're going to drill in a little bit. We actually have some data. Stu, can we pull that up? We have some data on the penetration, David, of mission-critical or business-critical applications into the VMware install base. This is VMware data that we want to share with you.
Yep.
David, House of Brick is a consultancy, and you guys specialize in Oracle. So you can see here on this chart that Stu's just pulled up. I don't know if you can enlarge that. And go to the right.
Just to let you know, I'm back, Dave.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, thank you, David. We'll get to you in a second. So we'd like that bar chart up. Enlarge that bar chart. So as you can see here, it's a little hard to see, but it basically shows the penetration of these various applications in 2010 and 2011. And you can see on the left-hand bar, that's Microsoft Exchange. And then moving from left to right, you can see Exchange goes to SharePoint, SQL, so a lot of Microsoft applications. And then Oracle middleware, Oracle database, and then SAP. You can see a lot of growth in this last year from SAP. Still some work to be done. We've had peer insights in the past talking about the penetration into Oracle and the concerns that users have around Oracle. And House of Brick, obviously, is a consultancy that helps accelerate that. But you can see that predominantly it's a Microsoft platform base, and we're now starting to see some uptick into those other mission-critical areas. What I want to do, David, is come back to you if you're still on. You there?
Yes, I am.
So break down the announcement for us. What's your assessment? I talked about the four areas, but why don't you summarize that and give us your take in terms of how should users be, what does it mean for IT organizations and businesses, and what's missing from this announcement?
Okay. Happy to get my take on that. The first group of customers are the small customers that maybe just have a few servers, maybe have a small SAN, but not much of a SAN. And one of VMware's focuses for this announcement is on making the low end more cost competitive. Obviously, they're looking over their shoulder at Microsoft's capabilities, with Hyper-V and other vendors as well. So they're looking to make the entry point as cheap as possible. And there's some great things there. The storage virtualization capability, the storage SAN capability within VMware, the SRM capabilities, and the just lower entry point makes it a very interesting version to go to for small users. If they're happy at the moment, then there's no rush to there. But if they want, in particular, to look at their SRM failover, I think, or look at the capabilities of sharing storage across the server they have, and there's some very interesting capabilities there. Will accelerate migration in that particular group. The other group are people who have done the easy stuff, done the development workload, and are moving into.
Sorry to interrupt you, but It'd be great if you just poke your head up a little higher. We can basically see the top of your lovely head.
There we go. You can shining in the sunlight. The in-group is the people who have got on the way. They've done the test and development, and they're looking to go further into the workloads. And what VMware has done has taken away pretty well all of the processor constraints. They've allowed 1 terabyte of virtual memory. They've allowed up to 32 machines. Correspondingly, the IOPS rates and the amount of storage, etc., have gone up. And inside version 5 of VMFS, there's a lot of good things, a lot of extensions that will make production systems much easier to scale on VMware. They'll take away those constraints. That doesn't mean to say they take away a lot of the other constraints, and we've talked about some of those before, because ISV qualification of Oracle and a lot of other constraints. They will take away some of the technology constraints that were there.
So 32 CPUs, a terabyte of memory, 36 gigabits per second or greater than, and then a million IOPS, the magic million IOPS.
Well, that's a theoretical figure, isn't it, like all these things. But I think, as the Rolls-Royce salesmen say, it's sufficient capacity there for most workloads, almost all the workloads. Obviously, it doesn't take away the fact that for some applications, virtualization on, say, an IBM P series may be more preferable. There are good reasons for other solutions, but if it can fit within the operating system, then you should be able to bring it onto VM.
Okay.
So for people wanting to...
So we got low-end announcement, we've got SRM in there, we've got this new scalability, really allocating more resources from a hardware perspective, largely to run applications and deal with I/O problems. And then the security piece. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, the security is a long, long road ahead. Fundamentally, security, as anybody's been following anything recently, security on the web really sucks and is not there in any shape or form. Fundamentally, putting VMware in increases the number of boundaries that have to be monitored. So the more VMs you have there, the more boundaries there are, the more nosy neighbors, the more loud neighbors, there's more errors that can happen. So from a security point of view, there are some things they've done. They make a small step on the road, but I think that people will still need to, I strongly believe that people will still need to separate out mission-critical workloads and put those in a separate machine or set of machines with a physical security on it, and break down the data center in the traditional way that it's been broken down. The VMware capabilities are not anywhere near where they need to be, and I suspect it's going to take a long time to get there.
Okay, so.
But it doesn't take away from the benefits. You just have to do it in smaller chunks.
Right. So specifically, what in your view is missing from this announcement that doesn't align with their vision of this software mainframe and the ability to make infrastructure essentially invisible, what Britt said, make infrastructure go away?
Right. Well, the two things are security. That's one area. The second is the VM, the management part of it. It's an ambitious goal that they have to manage all of this as one big chunk. And what has been found out by everybody else in the past is that as you increase the complexity of the number of moving parts that you have, so the overhead of management goes up at an accelerating rate, exponentially. So there becomes a limit where the complexity and the management to manage that complexity mean that you have to break things down. And the management at the moment is still not fantastic. I mean, it's improved, but again, there will need to be smaller chunks. Chunk things up, make things into usable groups, and don't try and manage too much, especially over secure and non-secure areas.
Okay, thank you, David. Now we have Alex Williams on the line. Alex is live at the announcement in San Francisco. Alex is SiliconANGLE's newest editor, heads up ServicesANGLE, which is a new publication. Alex, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Any takeaways that you got? Because we watched the live broadcast, and they cut us off after an hour. You continued on into Q&A and some other breakout sessions. Anything else you would add to what you've heard so far, and maybe even a services angle that you can bring in?
Yeah, there are a few things. First of all, you know, they're talking about this intelligent network and this intelligent management, and you know, in discussing this with some of the VMware executives, you know, they say that one of the big problems is that for so long, you know, these infrastructures have been device-centric, and they've had, you know, they really don't have, there's a lack of APIs for the physical infrastructure. And so without those APIs, it becomes very, you know, complicated to secure the connection between point A and point B. And so now we're moving into this world where everything is far more programmable, and there's a talent shortage out there. There's definitely a need for people who understand this, not only just on the services side, but also, you know, inside the companies that are developing the networking technology. We're starting to see virtual security appliances emerge. Services is becoming much more important in all respects. I think for, in particular, when companies are trying to integrate VCR 5, one of the things that they say that they've been doing is starting to work more closely with the major service providers, the Accentures, the Deloittes of the world, the CSCs of the world, to try to get them up to speed. And so that's really the challenge that I think, you know, that the customer faces now, is how to deal with the complexities of this technology and finding the right people to make it happen.
Yeah, Alex, actually, I'm showing a slide right now that VMware has put up talking about how they're looking to eliminate processes and automate things rather than before they were scripting. I think back to, you know, when I first got involved with VMware about, you know, 7 years ago and talked about how, you know, it used to take, you know, weeks or months to be able to deploy a physical server and roll that out and going through all of the people and the processes. And when we went to a virtual environment, they really reduced that greatly. But it seems that we once again have this place where there's enough processes and we've reached to have a little bit of VM stall and we have a little bit of VMware sprawl, so that people are trying to get a hold of what they're doing together. And as I think you put out, you know, services are going to be a big part of this. So we need to be able to simplify my virtual environment if I'm going to have it be the standard for what we're doing in our infrastructure.
Okay, well, and thank you, Alex. We'll come back to some of that. Now, one of the areas that has been a real source of concern for users and practitioners is storage. There was a period of time in VMware when you had some trouble with performance, and particularly storage performance. You'd need to roll in the PhDs to really try to sort out what was going on. A lot of the announcement today was around integration. We've done a lot of work at Wikibon around assessing integration at the storage level, you know, looking extensively at integration points. But Stu, what was announced today from a storage standpoint? And then let's break that down.
Great. So, Dave, in the storage area, it's been the APIs. Where, as you said, we've done a lot of research and focus on, let's take a quick look. If the recent research we had done looking at all of the vendors, it's not just how many integration points there are, but the value that those have to the end users. So SRM was a big one a couple of years ago. VAAI really helped performance. And that's one of the big pieces that we have from this vSphere 5 announcement is on VAAI, there are actually two additional integration points for Block, and there's also the introduction of VAAI for NAS for the first time. In addition to that, there's also the vStorage API for Storage Awareness, or VASA. It's been discussed kind of out in the industry for about the last 6 months, but now they're delivering on these pieces in vSphere 5.
All right, so while this is up, let's do a quick summary of this. So this is basically the integration points, a combination of the integration points and the value of that integration from a user perspective, and you can see that you know, you've got EMC and NetApp and HP with 3PAR leading the way, and of course Dell, Equalogic, Hitachi's right there. I mean, they're all the vendors are sort of bunched up, but you do see a lot of resources going into this from the standpoint of integration points and people trying to get to market fast. Obviously, EMC, they own VMware, they put a lot of resource on, behind this. You saw companies like Compellent, which got the, for instance, the VAAI API, SDK rather, very late because they're a small company. Now they're part of Dell. That's going to be dramatically accelerated. You can see Equalogic has popped up. 3PAR has always, you know, somehow put its nose under the tent and got in there. David, you made a comment the other day that you feel like this announcement is good for the industry. So let me ask you, is this announcement good for the storage industry or not good? I mean, on one hand, it's good with integration points and simpler API integration. On the other hand, you've got VMware encroaching on some of the traditional space of storage arrays. Steve Herrod even said today, no longer do you need to buy a block-based RAID to do some of this stuff. We can offer it as yeah. part of the operating system. Is this good or bad for...
Oh, I think it's definitely good. The goodness is that the amount of effort required with the APIs is much reduced. They can do it. It's the same for everybody. Everybody can work to these APIs. I was talking to Hitachi, which previously was struggling with 4.1. But they are going to have all of the capabilities of VAAI and VASA at the same time as version 5, ESX version 5 delivers in this quarter.
Okay, so VASA is new. VASA is new, right? Give me, what's the bumper sticker on VASA or VASA? What is it? Why is it important?
Well, it allows the API integration of the management of the storage, as opposed to having to do the plugins into the.
This is Nick. I just read the white paper on this, and they point out that storage awareness allows you to eliminate the spreadsheets where you're keeping track of the capabilities of all the LUNs.
Right.
Okay,
so you can know what type of storage that feeds into the capability of automating gold, silver, bronze standards, etc. So it's goodness because it's less effort. It's also good because it's easier. It'll be easier to implement from for use the integration, and it's. There's a low end capability with virtual machines. Those arrays are coming in anyway. There are other software arrays that are out there in the marketplace. So VMware bringing it in doesn't really affect the marketplace. It'll be there, and obviously as things get more complex, then the benefits of the array start to take over. Having said all that, there's clearly going to be a migration of capability from the arrays into the servers, and VMware, like other operating systems, will offer more and more over time. And the array vendors are going to have to work hard at maintaining the simplicity, in some cases reducing the cost of the capabilities that they have.
Okay, thank you, David. Let's go to Nick Allen. Nick, I'd like your perspectives on this and what you see as the key issues around storage, around the announcement here, what it means to users, and what's your take on this?
Well, first of all, the presentations kind of bounced back and forth between enterprise features and SMB features. And while there are a lot of storage capabilities that are common to both, I'd kind of like to start with the SMB. And I really think the vSphere storage appliance is probably the biggest part of this one. I just saw a tweet where it's available as a standalone product for $5.99. And of course, it allows you to pool the internal disks on servers together and share them. In terms of stimulating the market, they made iSCSI a lot easier. Better interface and also higher performance, and the replication feature. It's just a great one for remote office, branch office to a central data center kind of thing. And I think it'll get, I think it's very attractive to SMB, and I think SMB will embrace it. On the flip side, on the enterprise side, they talk about monster VMs, and you need infrastructure to support a monster VM. So you got VMFS5 supporting up to 64 terabytes, and they've kind of optimized how block sizes. Raw storage, is now up to a terabyte. They've announced a fiber channel over Ethernet. Software initiators to lower the cost of going to the higher performance protocols. They purportedly have solved the noisy neighbor problem, so you can have production machines or VIP machines and unimportant machines together, provided you secure them sufficiently. Since HA, high availability, was really the number one reason VMware was adopted, I think the SRM failback and the storage-related piece of that is the second most important part of this from a storage perspective. And they made it a lot easier to provision storage and move troublesome storage off to some place where it's not so troublesome, whether it's interfering with somebody's performance or it needs better performance. And, you know, that's less people time. It's profile-driven or policy-driven. And they'll even monitor storage and move things over. It remains to be seen how well it's actually going to work. For small environments, I could see how that would be good. For big ones, I don't know how you move a terabyte database somewhere on the fly. In terms of the vendors, you know, we've heard from most of the vendors either before this or after this, and they will be, for the most part, certified and shipping about the same time as GA for vSphere 5. So clearly the industry's on board, and things are moving.
Yeah, Nick, just a comment here from me. In talking to a lot of the vendors that we spoke with, I think on the SMB side, it was kind of good to hear from VMware's ecosystem that the server guys liked what they were hearing. So, you know, Dell and HP, you know, are going to be offering, you know, the vSphere storage appliance. And on the enterprise side, there's obviously a lot of work on the storage side. And it's not just because of EMC. We've heard from Dell and from NetApp that they had input on that functionality that was built into vSphere. So, VMware, really the thing that always shines for me is they've got a good, robust ecosystem. It's not just VMware's way of doing things. Security is all working with partners. There was some goodness definitely built into this from the ecosystem, and we definitely heard from all of their partners that everybody's got a full press to support these. I think Steve Harris said there's going to be over 2,000 certifications done. Sounds a bit onerous for everybody to go through the certification processes, but definitely speaks to that $45 billion ecosystem that they've built.
So we talked to a number of companies in this research, all the big storage companies, so EMC, NetApp, HP, IBM, Hitachi,
and Dell.
Those are the big ones. We talked to some of the little guys like Tintri.
Yep.
Who came up actually in the survey. So this research is, how do people find this? It's on Wikibon.
Yeah, wikibon.org. If you search VMware integration,
yep,
it's probably the best way to find it.
Okay, so there's a survey that we did. There's an analysis. of all the competing products in terms of their integration and functionality, and there's more coming out on that. So look for that. I want to talk about the vision a little bit and try to juxtapose the what I call sometimes true cloud, Amazon, Google, Apple, Facebook, with the enterprise cloud guys, which is really being led by VMware and certainly to a certain extent Citrix and some others, but VMware is obviously the big one.
And especially Citrix made a little bit of buzz this morning with the cloud.com acquisition.
Yeah, so Citrix bought cloud.com. That's I think I read something on SiliconANGLE about that. But before I get there, I want to open it up to anybody in the audience that might have some specific questions or comments about the announcement. Anything that you're not sure of, anything you're struggling with and you want some advice on, or any observations that you would make. Go ahead.
Good morning. This is Michael Hessen from Hitachi Data Systems. I'm the Chief Technologist for Virtualization. I just have a comment with regard what we saw today and the benefits that we're going to see to the industry. I think that the first comment is standardization with the storage vendors using the API infrastructure. We did touch on VASA, we did touch on VAI, SRM, another area. But we're really now building a standardized framework from the storage vendor perspective into ESX. And this version is really taking it to that next level so that the infrastructure can basically seamlessly be automated with that integration. I think the second point that I have also too, now it's about the next level of design and architecture from a storage perspective to be able to provide that level of infrastructure to go away, as we saw this morning. In order to do that, you need a back-end framework that you can create very large resource pools. So the examples that were done today, that were given today, was being able to automate from a policy-based management from a VMS version 5 to extend VMFS to a large partition size. We also saw further integrations with VAI to allow automation for storage page reclamation, reclaiming space. These features and functions need to be somewhat automated in some form of large capability at the back end. So what I think we will see moving forward is that RAS concept, that reliability, scalability, and availability component.
Great.
So speaking of RAS and speaking of software mainframes, I recall that in ZOS, over 2/3 of the code is focused on reliability and recovery and not delivering function. And not so long ago, 2/3 of the circuits in the mainframe were about RAS. My question is VMware going to get to that level of availability anytime fast?
And there were other differences, other things that they did as well. Any security breach was a level 1 APAR within the MBS world. So they treated security and they treated recoverability as incredibly high investment points.
Okay, so David Floyer, has VMware in July of 2011 succeeded in building the software mainframe?
No. They're doing extremely well in terms of capabilities that are really helping customers virtualize their infrastructure and save money and do things more efficiently. And the new release is extremely good addition to that. Where I think there's a lot more work to do is in the extension of that to slide things in and out of service providers, for example. Moving data is difficult. There's a lot more work to be done on the security area. There's a lot more work to be done on the management area. But for customers who have their workloads, know what they are, want to run them more efficiently, want to take advantage of some, in particular, of the high availability features, this is all great news. I think the overall vision is a way off in the future, if we ever get there. But it doesn't mean to say that this isn't great news for people who have got VMware and want to extend its use.
Okay, other comments, questions, concerns before we move on to the vision thing? Anything else anybody wants to add?
Dave Welch with House of Brick. Just in response to the high availability issue, one thing that I would have looked for, and I'm not hearing in this announcement, it well may be that it's being presented in the detail that they didn't have the opportunity to get into. They had to pick out the three features that they wanted to talk about. I'm looking forward to SMP capabilities and VMware fault tolerance. Currently, I have a tendency to yawn when people ask us about VMware fault tolerance because we deal with Tier 1 customers, and most of those workloads, high watermark CPU, cannot fit inside a single vCPU. But I think there are going to be some serious, serious ripples in the market as customers are compelled, especially those customers that are running very expensive, very complex incumbent cluster RDBMS technologies. When we get the capability with SMP fault tolerance to bring people's HA SLAs down to seconds using anybody's brand of RDBMS, single instance RDBMS. So if I have any one big disappointment having to do with the release, and maybe it's there and I haven't noticed it yet, it is that is still on the horizon and has not yet arrived.
Customer support in general is not there, is it, as yet?
I'm sorry, David, you said cluster support in general is not there yet?
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole level up of complexity and a whole set of capabilities that I'm sure VMware will be bringing in to support clustered systems.
Okay.
Dave Welch, with SMP, you mean symmetric multiprocessors, right?
Correct. Look, the capability to have 2 or 4, 6 or 8 vCPUs assigned to a single fault-tolerant feed. The current limit's single vCPU, and that limit, it's a very difficult architecture. I don't envy them trying to figure it out. The single vCPU fault-tolerant threshold has been in place since vSphere 4 went GA in May of 2009, and apparently is still in place.
One of the other things that Rick Jackson, the CMO of VMware, talked about today at the announcement that we were watching was licensing. Now, we don't have the details yet, but for the users on the call, this is obviously a very important area. Licensing has been relatively complex. It's been based on physical resources, CPUs, cores, and the like. And VMware announced today that it's moving to a virtual licensing approach.
Well,
I think they called it VRAM, virtual RAM.
It's still licensing per CPU. They're not switching to per VM licensing for vSphere, but right, the virtual RAM is going to be flexible between processors, as I believe.
So you'll be able to pool memory, main memory,
yep,
and share it without being penalized.
So the feedback that I've gotten from just watching the Twitter stream is that their licensing is complex, and there's definitely a number of users that are barking that they're not happy with the changes that they heard. So it's definitely an area to keep an eye out on.
Okay, so the anecdotal evidence suggests that VMware still has some work to do in licensing. Yeah, of course, licensing a lot of times is all about the software vendors maintaining or maximizing their revenue flows. So even if VMware does solve the problem, which it sounds like they haven't, you've still got issues from Oracle and SAP and others, and they're not likely just going to, you know, lose revenue just the simplified pricing. That's never historically happened in the software business.
Yeah.
But, okay, and I don't know if anybody else has picked up anything on licensing. We don't really have a lot yet, and we need more time to analyze that.
I've downloaded the white paper, but I haven't had time to read it.
Okay. Alex, did you
Dave Welch jumping in here.
Oh, go ahead, Dave, please.
Yeah, that piece of the announcement really put a knot in my stomach. It's going to be interesting to break out the spreadsheets and see what's going on here. On the one hand, a couple of years ago when VMware went from instance-based to, or that is, host-based to instance-based licensing on SRM, a lot of people complained. My attitude was deal with it. This is wonderful software, and the market has continued to reward them as that product goes flying off the shelves in excess in excess of VMware's own projections. I hope what's happening here with this licensing realignment, I hope that they're not hiding the knife in every corporation's desire to figure out ways to maximize revenue. I spend quite a bit of my professional life trying to help people understand that even though Oracle Corporation never intended it with their processor-based licensing, that we happen to believe that Oracle's processor-based licensing is quite VMware-friendly. And the one area that we struggle with, of our customers even have performance issues on Tier 1 VMware out of the box. Once that is resolved, our customers have pressure on memory, not on CPU, and we fight the constant battle where shops start to cross the chasm into Tier 1, and they're showing us ESX server host plans that are populated with maybe 48 gig of RAM per host. That just won't do, and we've been telling everybody that the one area that has no impact whatsoever on your Oracle processor-based license is memory. And so suddenly having to deal with announcement that's talking about memory-based licensing in any aspect, even though we don't really understand the detail yet, we're just going to have to break this down and run the spreadsheets and see if VMware here with this announcement may have, and I don't know this, but may have inadvertently given the Oracle Tier 1 candidate community more pause to hold back. Hope that's not the case.
And your concern there, just so we understand, is that the dynamic nature of the system is going to allocate more memory to the Tier 1 app and then hence increase the licensing cost accordingly.
Exactly. Oracle, for three decades, the kernel has gotten its performance by reading from and writing to memory. It knows nothing about disk I.O. and surrounds itself with background processes to manage disk reads and writes. And so that whole memory area of Oracle does best when it is not swapped out. And, we need a lot of memory to handle that. And if suddenly we're going to a licensing paradigm that has any aspect of its license based on memory, which apparently this is, we're going to have to look very carefully at that to make sure that Oracle customers don't have a new reason to be concerned about crossing that chasm.
Okay. Any other comments or questions before we move on? Just want to make sure everybody has an opportunity to chime in. Okay. All right, so the four horsemen of the cloud, Amazon, Google, Apple, and Facebook, are out there, and they're, in the case of Amazon, for example, we know the problems with SLAs, but it's just been good enough for a lot of small and mid-sized businesses, and good enough for a lot of departments, and even some IT organizations. Here's VMware coming in. Moritz made the comment today, based on some research from third parties, that 40% of x86 workloads are now virtualized, and by the end of this year, it'll be 50%. So we're starting to see some major adoption, not surprising. He made the comment that he can't think of only a few examples where a platform has achieved that level of penetration in a short time. What do you say, 10, 15-year type of thing? He said the IBM mainframe, the x86 platform itself, and now VMware. So the question becomes, can VMware be the cloud operating system? Can it become the standard for the enterprise and as well for this new emerging set of applications? He talked about supporting legacy apps and this new emerging set of mobile and consumer apps. You've got IT being driven by the consumerization of technology, driven to simplify. Many CEOs just want to outsource the lot of their application portfolio to the cloud. CIOs are holding on saying, wait a minute, we've got to protect the privacy and security of our data. And so their strategy, VMware's, is to work with service providers. Alex mentioned Accenture, Deloitte, CSC, and there are many others, some traditional, some emerging, to partner with them so they can offer rental, compute as rental or storage as rental. And so you're seeing some interesting cloud washing going on in the industry where people are saying, yeah, we're cloud, you're seeing, like, for instance, we had John Furrier, I think you're on, you had the CEO of Nervonix on, Scott Genereau, said, hey, the industry's cloud washing. We're cloud. We have real cloud. We rent. What he meant by that is we can rent capacity. So VMware is partnering to go for that rental model. And essentially, they're putting forth a scenario where Moritz called it sliding applications from your private cloud to your public cloud. Sliding, he used that term, and sliding them back. Now, we've done some research at Wikibon. I don't know if we have the pie chart. Do you have it? Where we talked to a number of customers and asked them which of the following best describes your attitude toward cloud, and only about single digits, certainly less than 10%, said they were pursuing a hybrid cloud strategy. So the question is, is VMware onto the right trends? Do they just realize that this is not happening as fast as they want it to, and they need to market to it? What do you guys think about that notion of sliding applications from a private to a public and back? First of all, why would I want to do that? And second of all, is it practical? David, you want to start us off?
Sure. The one problem with sliding applications is that you need the data to go with the applications. And as Nick said earlier, moving a terabyte of data across any network takes a long time. So that's the first issue, is that you've got to take the data with you. The second issue is that data centers and have a whole number of applications which link with each other. So it is it's not only the data of that application, but what applications that feed.
David.
Hi. Somebody's got some music going on.
That's almost worse than the music at the beginning of the VMware webcast.
Come on, David. I'll try to mute.
All right. Okay. Shall I carry on?
Please.
So the second issue is that the applications feed data to each other. So sliding one application out, if it's feeding other applications or being fed by other applications, again leads to long and expensive transfer of data. So there are applications that can be slid out. There are development applications tend to be a lot easier to do that. There are applications which are naturally in the web. For example, email, for example, communicates with lots of other areas. There are standalone applications which can be farmed out. But the wholesale sliding of work from one to another is a vision which is in my view not very practical. There'll be good pieces you can carve out, but there'll be a lot that you want to keep together because it's far faster to move data within a data center than between data centers. By far faster, two orders of magnitude faster. So that's my main concern with one of the two main concerns is that is practically not very feasible. For example, they gave an example today that if you had a storm coming, you could migrate all your applications over to another data center. If you do the math on it, on how long it would take to move all the data from a reasonable sized data center, the storm would have been and gone and come many times before you could do that.
As Herod used the example of a power outage or a hurricane.
Yes, and that's right.
Disasters, by their very nature, are unpredictable. But even if they were predictable, you're saying that the time it would take to move the data would be prohibitive to that scenario.
Yes, absolutely.
So I just wanted to interrupt for a second, David. So up on the
on the TV we have this slide, and it might be a little tough to read, but I'll take you through it. Which of the following best describes your attitude toward cloud computing? 26% said we're pursuing cloud computing, but just getting started. That was the number one response. The second was, at 22%, we're cautious about outsourcing to the public cloud, but we are building private clouds. And then the third most common was, we have no clear cloud computing plans. That was 22%. 15% said cloud is a meaningless buzzword. And then 6% said we're primarily pursuing a public cloud strategy. And then 9% said we will use a hybrid of public and private clouds. So less than the single digits for hybrid clouds. Now, these were IT practitioners. So these are guys on the front line, the guys who are on this call. Some of you are skeptics about the term cloud, I know, in conversations. But the point is, clearly, and we've talked to others, for instance, we talked to Michelle Bailey at IDC about this, her data is showing the same thing, that hybrid cloud adoption is really right now very slow. And so this idea of sliding in and out, it's just not proven yet. IT needs to get its house in order. Largely, these clouds today are separate. And you've got companies like CSC, for instance, really pursuing hybrid clouds, trying to go after those applications that are candidates for those. But it's early days, isn't it?
Very early days. And as you say, the major implementations are separate. It's opportunistic. We can run this particular application, which doesn't interface with anything else, cheaper on the cloud. It might be an HR application, or it might be Salesforce.com. It's opportunistic to lower costs. What many people have found is that it's a very good way of starting an application off, but then they bring it back in-house because it's a lot cheaper to run it in-house on a long term. So it's very early days, and the other two major constraints to sliding things in and out are both privacy, both security, and management. It's having a set of policies which are perfectly in line across a distance is a management PhD project of a 20-year duration. So I think it'll be very pragmatic things going forward. VMware will have a great place in both the services industry and in the data centers, but there will be not a lot of connection between all of these different things other than sending just data backwards and forwards.
Okay, good. So we're pretty much out of time here. I just want to make sure that nobody else has anything to add. Alex, I don't know if you have anything else to add from the live. I don't even know if you're still on. You might have had to go on, but
I would just add one thing about this last conversation, and it's really here where you see the differentiation between VMware and Citrix, for example, and its acquisition of Cloud.com, and that I think is going to be a continuing story that we're going to see as Citrix accelerates, especially with OpenStack, and service providers themselves are starting to adopt the Cloud.com platform itself to provide services to those small businesses. So VMware faces some pretty stiff competition out there, and that's a story that in the services world I think is worth watching.
Excellent. Okay, well, thanks everybody for listening in today. I want to also thank my colleagues Stu Miniman and Jeff Kelly working the camera with Dave Butler, David Floyer, Nick Allen, Dave Welch of House of Bricks, House of Brick, and Marco from HDS. I hope I got that right. I'm sorry if I botched your name. And Alex Williams of SiliconANGLE. Thank you very much for your contribution. Just as a reminder, at the end of this meeting, we convene and assign research notes. We'll have 6 research notes up on this call. Please feel free to hit edit, improve the pieces, write a wiki tip. We very much appreciate your contributions. As another reminder, we will be at VMworlds 2011. The Cube will be there live. We've got a big program planned, so look for more information about that. Appreciate all the great guests, and thanks for listening today, everybody, and thanks for being a Wikibon member. Bye for now.